AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, holiday edition. And, of course, one of our favorite guests to have on every holiday season, Cliff Schechter, is kind enough to join us. If you're not following him on YouTube, you are wrong. He has got great insight. And it's just an absolute pleasure to have him back on to talk about all sorts of things. But before anyone gets out there and says, when are you getting to the politics? We'll get to the politics. We're going to talk baseball first. Cliff, first of all, happy holidays. Thank you very much, as always, for joining us, my friend.
My pleasure. I'm glad that you can't think of anybody more jolly than me to have on during the holidays. It's quite a compliment.
You are a sock full of coal every year, my friend. No, you are fantastic. And you are actually, tell the truth, I mean, you're one of the more popular shows we have on during the holidays, for sure. People love hearing from you because we'll get to your insight here. But I actually think it's because of the baseball. Once again, for the precursor before we get to this, Cliff is a Yankees fan. He's, of course, is a Reds fan, too, because he's in Cincinnati. That town deserves a better team than you guys got. And, of course, I love the Twins. I love Boston, and I love Milwaukee, too, so...
We're just unloading all of our talent to you right now. When I say us, I mean the Reds. We're like, hey, you want Sonny Gray? You want Kyle Farmer? I'll start by saying, like, before I get to the Yankees, and so folks know that I'm not a bandwagon fan. I grew up in that town and spent many years there. It's depressing. I mean, you know, like, it's sad. As you said, we deserve a better team than that. You look at sort of similar sized cities, you know, Kansas City, and you know, Cleveland, and these places that may not be able to spend the money of the big markets, but have found ways, have owners that at least believe in investing in, which our owners don't seem to care at all about, in the team, and building real teams that can compete, and you know, making it to the playoffs. And you guys are one of those teams too. You may not have the payroll, you know, of an LA or a New York or whatever, but like, you know, at least you guys bring in stars and try to do it to the point where you make the playoffs. You give people some excitement. This team here, you know, and I'll get to the Yankees quickly, but this team here is depressing. Like, the ownership should sell the damn team, and I think they should be forced to because it's pathetic, and this market is big enough, if Cleveland is big enough to do what they do, to hold on to many of those guys, Winker, you know, Castellanos, all these guys they sent out there, the guys to your team. I mean, we had a team that could compete 2-3 years ago and make the playoffs, and they've just destroyed it. So, okay.
Well, and the Reds. I mean, the Reds have got such a great – I remember growing up with the Reds. They're a great team. Cincinnati just deserves a better group of owners because that team should be better. That's a good baseball market, and it really is disturbing to watch how, the second anyone on that team becomes good, they're on the plane out of town.
Do you know how much brand loyalty there was? They've ruined it, and there's still some, but there was here – because of the fact of the Big Red Machine. I mean, yes, those are folks that are getting older now. That was the Big Red Machine was in their height when I was 3 years old. I'm not saying it wasn't a while ago, but you got a lot of 70-something, whatever, 60-something boomers and others who, you know, had massive loyalty because, you know, this is one of the better teams they've ever seen, if not the best. And they've just pissed it all away. And it's infuriating. Yeah. You know, two times, I've lived here a decade now, and two times during that, they've had teams that could go to potentially go to a World Series. You know, the last time before this is when they had Jay Bruce in his prime, you know, and they had Cueto in his prime, and they had Frazier in his prime, and all these other Brandon Phillips, and they just basically threw everybody away. And it just, this is the first time was angry enough that they're like, well, we're rebuilding towards something. The second time, you know, I'm still going to go to games. I'm going to root for them, but I don't see how anybody could want to be a huge fan of a team that treats you like that. I don't understand it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the Yankees. You and I talked earlier this year. The problem with the Yankees was going to be they come up against a good pitching team, and that's what ended up happening to them. They got shut down. Still an amazingly solid foundation there. You're going to probably – I can't believe you're not going to be the AL East pick.
I think so. I mean, look, it comes down to there, it's a whole different story. There, the frustrating thing is just the fact that Hal Steinbrenner – comparatively is cheap, and it's frustrating because the amount of money that team makes $200 million more than any other team when you combine the TV contracts, the merchandise. So everybody's like, oh, the Yankees spend so much. First of all, we're not even the highest spending team. The Mets are going to blow us away, and one or two other teams may also.
The Mets are
going to have a billion-dollar team. But then you start looking at, like, also – the percent of revenue spent. And we're like, we're in the middle of the league. I mean, we are not, I mean, the money they're making, the fact that our payroll is up, you know, $30 million or something from what it was 20 years ago is sad. And then he keeps giving Brian Cashman, you know, new contracts. It'd be nicely for you guys, unloaded that ridiculous Josh Donaldson contract. And you're like, well, look, the Yankees have a $260 million payroll. And you're sort of like, yeah, that's because we're paying Josh Donaldson $27 million to not hit the ball. I mean, somebody, yeah. Look at what other teams with smart GMs have done. If you know, give the GM, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays or somebody like that, our payroll, and they'll win the World Series every year. I mean, so it's that Hal should be spending more, but Cashman should be doing so much more with what he's got. I'm obviously very happy they re-signed Judge, but it's classic them that they're sitting there right now. You know, when Rodon wants to come to New York. And you know, that would just make our pitching rotation just so good, you know, and probably one of the best, if not the best in the league. And like, they're nickel and diming and haggling and arguing with them when they've got so much money, you know, and it's like, yeah. I'm sorry that you wasted all that money on Donaldson, but you chose to do that. It was stupid when you did it, but you did it. So sign Rodon so you have the pitching center. Bring in a left-hander because we have only one of them right now, or two. If you count the young guy, Cabrera, you know, bring in Benintendi or bring in Conforto or bring in, like, you know, to find a way to get another one. Heck, there was even talk of them trying to trade, like, prospects and do something to try to get Arias away from you guys. Do something, but yeah. We need another left-handed contact bat. And if we don't have it, it's just going to be the same thing. Like, this is predictable. I predicted it. You know, I talked to you about this, and I told you this last year. I was like, what's going to happen is we're going to beat teams like the Guardians, and then we're going to come up against that buzzsaw of hard-throwing righties in Houston, and we're going to get crushed because we have strikeout guys and we have righties. We do not have lefty contact guys who can put the ball into play. And obviously it hurt us that Benintendi got hurt because he was one of the guys we needed. But, like, it shouldn't all rely on whether he's hurt or not. There should be two or three more like him. That's my rant on that.
I want to just get your thoughts on one thing. I think we're entering into an age of belligerence in baseball. And as I think your points are on Judge, I mean, I think you're right. I think the Donaldson contract is trouble for the Yankees. But, you know, they went out and got Judge, and Judge really couldn't go anywhere else. That's different. Carlos Correa,
yes.
I was actually surprised at how well he merged in with the Twins. I loved him. I wanted him to stick around, keep him long-term deal. It sounds like, and it was interesting, the agents were calling out the Twins' ownership this year, saying, you're one of the richest 10 owners in the league. Stop talking about freaking luxury taxes. Go get the players you need. And that's the mentality you really have to have. You know, the luxury tax be damned. If you're putting together a team, it will be worth it. And to give the Twins some credit, they actually, it sounds like, had a 10-year deal on the table for him.
Yeah, but then come the Giants. I mean, they made him very reasonable, a very strong offer, and it's just gotten insane now.
Well, and that's it. And now we're getting to the point where the Giants, just because of belligerence, they can just, okay, we'll throw three more years on there. We'll throw another $60 million on there. Just not because that contract makes any damn sense. Because, I mean, it was a bit of a reach with the Twins, to be honest, but at the same time...
Paying a guy who's never hit 30 home runs, you know, the amount of money they're paying... I'm not saying he's not a very good
exactly.
player, but he had 64 RBIs last year, and they're paying him like he's a Hall of Famer, and they're paying him through the age of 41. That's insane.
Yeah. And by the way, the Giants are going to have trouble with some of the talent they've got on their roster now because of that contract. But the thing that's just crazy, Dodgers, Giants, Yankees, Red Sox... You know, these teams, if we're going to get to a point where even the teams that are generally not the big spenders are putting out pretty big-sized contracts, taking a risk 10 years, 8 years, 10 years, you know, $150, $200 million, $200-plus, and they're just basically, well, we'll just throw another 2 years on there just to keep that guy in house. I mean, we're getting into that age of belligerence where it almost becomes difficult for any team outside of a handful to get any of the superstar players.
I know, and it frustrates me. And again, you know, I've made my kind of thoughts on what baseball should do very clear because I'm a big fan of soccer. And if you see how this plays out, you know, in international soccer, like Bayern Munich is going to win the Bundesliga every year. Maybe every once in a while yep. Dortmund can compete, but because they're the only two teams that have any money to spend. Like, is that what you want? You know, you want Real Madrid and Barcelona to dominate? I mean, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, and yet I would say to you, like, I don't want that. Like I think that what I would do, what I would have is, I think there should be a ceiling and a floor, honestly. And if you go above, you know, the ceiling could either be a hard ceiling, or it could be a ceiling where it's not just a luxury tax, it's massive sort of redistribution above that. And if you're below the floor, you have to sell the damn team. Because if you're not willing to compete, I'm sorry, this is different than any other kind of business. It's, you know, sports. It's emotion. It's based on emotion. People in cities care about their teams winning. You don't own a factory, or you don't own something like that where you can just say, I don't feel like spending a lot of money. If you're not willing to spend money so teams can be competitive, so the league can remain interesting, leave. It's not a piggy bank. Find another piggy bank somewhere. You know, and that's what I would say. I mean, because you're right. I mean, and what it would be right now, I don't know. But, you know, maybe there should be a floor of like $150 million right now and a ceiling of $300 million or something. And that would be a way you can make sure no team outspent any other team by more than 2-1. You know?
And you're going to have every year.
You can be outspent 2-1 and win. But you can't be outspent
7-1. Yeah, if you got teams spending $150 million, you're going to have two of those smaller market teams rise up just because they're going to get lucky enough with young talent to make a real splash in these playoffs. And I think that your plan is actually makes a heck of a lot of sense, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to go full sort of like, you know, NFL, where you, and I don't particularly, because I think sometimes they have to give up players that teams would like to keep because they go above a cap, and that bothers me too. I don't want to take it that far. Because I don't want you to have to give up certain guys that you want to keep on your team that cities grow to like. But I think if you give some flexibility and you create a wide window like I just did, but you say no team is going to spend more than 2-1 over any other team. Again, plenty of teams have proven they can win if they're outspent 2-1. That if they're outspent 5-1, 7-1, whatever, then it starts getting ridiculous. That's my feeling. That is how I would reform it. But nobody's asking
you
me,
get to,
except for you.
You get to Minneapolis, I'll take you out to Target Field, man, and you and I, I'll get some good seats, and we'll spend 3 freaking hours just talking this, because I could, seriously, this would make my existence happy, just sit talking baseball with you, Cliff, for hours on end.
Yeah.
But we do have some other things which are actually somewhat pleasing to talk about that we need to change direction on. So let's go back and look at 2022. You and I said this after Roe got overturned. Is that the Republicans clearly, they were the dog that caught the car. They didn't understand what they just did. And now they're all frantically trying to say, what do you mean we were trying to get rid of abortion and the women's rights to choose? And now this is not this election cycle. This is a change in American idealism in our society to where Republicans are now frantically trying to validate their, you know, anyone voting for them outside of their most, you know, strident supporters.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are like, call them sort of further circles of extremism, right? What ends up happening is, you know, when somebody, some party, some group starts heading down this path is, and especially when you have an entertainment complex like I do that's really running the show, Fox News, you know, talk radio, people, folks like that have as much say as any party leader does. What you end up with is, you know, and sometimes more, quite, you end up with, you know, it's like reminds me of, like, I always say the French Revolution. One week, Robespierre's the guy saying who should get guillotined because he's the most radical, and next week he's the one being guillotined because he's not radical enough. You know, and that's the death spiral, quite frankly, the Republican Party is in, is that every new group, remember when the Tea Party was considered to be radical? That's what brought in Adam Kingsley, who's probably one of their most moderate members now. I mean, that was only 10 years ago, 12 years ago. I mean, it's just one wave after another. Each wave gets more ridiculous, more crazy, more untethered to reality, filled with conspiracies, than the racism, the anti-Semitism, the anti-gay sentiment, all of it. And, you know, look, it leads to predicted results, right? I mean, the guy who attacked Paul Pelosi, he had a list. Does that remind you of anything? Yeah. Like, what's his face with the list, you know, who attacked John Lennon? I mean, he was going to go after Tom Hanks, you know, and I just had it in front of me, but he had Tom Hanks on his list, and he had, I can't think of who else, maybe you know off the top of your head, but like, you know, this is what they're doing. They're essentially encouraging, inciting violence. And then, of course, what ends up happening is somebody listens to them and does it. they can't sort of fully distance themselves. They won't fully distance themselves from Nazis. We went through this whole thing with Nick Fuentes and Kanye and the rest of them, dinner with Donald and all the other, you know, stuff. And the end result of all this is they're losing normal people. And when I say normal people, I mean people that don't agree with you and me. You know, moderate conservatives and conservatives, because I know plenty of people like that who are executives and who work at companies and whatever. And you and I pointed out that, that with Roe, it was the dog that caught the car. Absolutely. With some of the stuff they've done also, I would say also the number of school shootings, especially a couple of the groupings of them that happened. Like, I'd say those two issues, the two top ones I saw, you know, and then I would say also attacks on the LGBTQIA community. Like, that really galvanized Gen Z. And we'd seen it early. We saw it in that Kansas vote. You know, and all these sort of insider types who do polling, they go, well, you know, we poll the same way. We will tell you who's going to turn out. And you're like, yeah, periods of time like this, you don't know who's going to turn out because we're seeing people turn out that you're not polling. Gen Z folks don't have landlines. They're not answering your cell phones when you call them. They don't want to talk to you. And guess what? They're turning out in droves because you've driven them there. Not to mention, I forgot about student debt and other things. I mean, all these Republicans are now in courts and in whatever trying to overturn student debt relief. You think that might piss them off? I mean, a whole generation of people that were sold on college and given basically and turned into serfs basically by these ridiculous loans that always get forgiven, by the way, for everybody else in government, right? Like the PPE and all that. But God forbid you're going to forgive, you know, student loans so the kids can go to college and have a brighter future. And so, you know, you combine that they radicalized, you know, not in a bad way, in a good way, frankly, Gen Z to want to turn out huge numbers. They lost women, obviously, on Roe in a huge way. And the number showed, you may remember there were some Democrats like, we should be talking kitchen table issues, you know, and my response back then was like, no, we should, no, that's part of your narrative. Your narrative is how all the ways in that Republicans are attacking our democracy, attacking our economy, and making people's lives harder. So yes, the fact that they're attacking people's jobs, the fact that they're voting against, you know, raising wages and all these things, that should be part of it. But don't give me this that people don't care about democracy. Are you kidding me? You just need to explain it to them. And when you go out and you tell people what happened, and guess what? The biggest factor among Republicans who voted Democratic this time, and again, I know some of those people too, all the way up and down the ticket, the biggest factor was the attacks on democracy by the Republican Party. So they did it.
Well, and I wanted to add that in there. I wanted to add that in there because I think that that was another massive underestimate by Republicans, was that their own party was like, okay, yeah, I don't want Democrats to win, but I'm not to the point where I'm going to start, you know, violently attacking cops at the Capitol. Nor, and I think, and we saw this in Arizona, especially with the loon ball fringe they got out there, these constant, I didn't win, hence the election was fraudulent. I think that, you know, even, you know, I know Republicans are loyal, but I think there got to be a point where it's like, okay, are you saying all the races were fraudulent or just yours? Because now you're sounding like an absolutely insane person. And that's what they now are. That's extremism is looking extremism. And I think that that's turning off their own party.
It is. I mean, people just had enough, you know, at some point it's enough. You can sort of keep people who are core Republicans, been Republicans their whole lives, you know, through you do this, you do that, you do a couple things here and there. You know, you try to say Trump was just an exception. But when it becomes clear, Trump's not an exception. Trump went through giant loopholes you created, and you're all like this, with the exception of a couple people, you know, and that you're pushing religious extremism. You're pushing conspiratorial extremism. You're pushing gun extremism. You're, you know, like, you're ignoring climate. You're, when it gets to the point where, like, this is what you do, eight of you, eight in the House, were only willing to vote in favor of guaranteeing the right to birth control. I mean, are you kidding me? So, I mean, what the end result of all that is what we saw first in the general election, what we saw in Georgia afterwards, you know, and then, of course, they let you know, Donald Trump, oh, he doesn't control us, except for he picked your Senate candidates, all of whom suck, all of whom he picked because of two reasons. One, they've been on TV, because that's the only thing that matters to him. And the second thing is, and the second thing is, they've said nice things about me. That's the other thing that matters. You could be Adolf Hitler. If you say something nice about Donald Trump, he's like, well, Adolf Hitler, I mean, he said some nice things about me. I mean, that's what he would do. He's done that with Kim Jong-un. Why do you like him? Well, he said nice things about me. Oh, okay. Well, the fact that he mass murders and starves people, that doesn't matter. He said nice things about you, so that's okay. I mean, the people have seen all this. Republicans have seen all this. And again, I know plenty of these types of sort of moderate or moderate conservative Republicans, you know, and they couldn't support this. They couldn't get behind this. And so, and what I hate, the last thing I do have to say, because it's so important here, is again, the media stupidity, the media is enabling, the New York Times, I could go off on what trash their political desk is forever. But, you know, they don't give people any of the context of any of this, because the truth of the matter is that Republicans did not actually really win back the House either. They cheated, so they got the House back. Okay? I mean, Andrew Cuomo screwed us and put Republican judges on the court in New York because he was trying to be all Mr. Bipartisan because he wanted to run for president. I'm not sorry to see what happened to him in the end. And the result was they overturned what was a completely logical and completely made sense, you know, district lines, and they cost us two or three more seats in New York. You know, in Florida, DeSantis stepped up and redrew lines in something that I can't believe is constitutional over the sort of, you know, overruled his own court. And, you know, here in Ohio, of course, you know, they ignored the Supreme Court and they kept redrawing seats a little better to run the clock out a little bit better. So, yeah, we did end up picking up a seat here because they had to improve things in the end. But they improved things maybe 30-40% of what they should have. We should have had another seat or two from here. You know, we should have lost one or two seats less in New York. But when the court came to a decision, we actually followed the law, unlike them. And then there's Texas and Florida, whatever. Like, they didn't win back the House. They cheated back the House. We would have we'd have 5 to 10 seats more if the law were applied equally on gerrymandering everywhere. So there's that too.
Cliff, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the election cycle, but then I also want to focus on what is about to be one of the more enjoyable things to watch, the absolute, you know, internal eating of itself of the Republican Party, which we're going to observe over the next 2 years. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us for one of the holiday interviews. We'll take a break and come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice in Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show, Cliff Schechter, who, by the way, Cliff, I got you a set of those Donald Trump digital cards for the holidays.
I was hoping you'd bring that up today. My God. I mean, you can't.
Is there anything more delusional?
There's no level down to which you can sink and say to yourself, like, you can't even predict how low he'll go because he'll find lower. Like, I have no expectations anymore, and I assume he'll do the most gauche, pathetic, like, gross, disgusting, con man thing, but he finds a way to even get lower than my expectations. It's rather incredible.
By the way, if you want more takes on Cliff, and I want to make sure I get this out before we go any further, your YouTube page is fantastic. You're up on YouTube under Cliff Schechter. You're posting on a real consistent basis there. That's pretty solid stuff, man.
Thank you. And by the way, folks, you know, come by now and subscribe, please, because We are literally about 120 away from breaking 10,000 in about 6 months, which I'm pretty happy with. So let the subscriptions flow, if you will. Yeah, I mean, if you like me on this show, add a couple curses in and video, and you got me. It's the same thing.
Seriously, if you want to be smarter about issues, there's a handful of people to listen to, and Cliff is one of them, and he's there on YouTube, and you can go back and look at all of his videos. Go to YouTube, Cliff Schechter, hit subscribe, hit like. I think there's a bell or whatever. I don't do that stuff. But needless to say, you need to do that for Cliff, all right? And you will be smarter for it. Cliff, I want to get back to politics a little bit. One of the things I found to be very interesting, Minnesota, Michigan, to a point, Ohio, states where there was a very energized top-to-bottom Democratic Party, you end up having insane results. One of the things I criticized Wisconsin, they didn't even run two Democrats didn't even run in two of the U.S. House races out there. And I'm like, that is freaking unforgivable, just because not only on the House races, fine, you don't think you're going to win them, but you've just annihilated any down ticket chances there. The reason why the Republicans are able to hold the Assembly and the Senate in Wisconsin is not necessarily because of their great candidates, but you're not trying. And I think one thing that Democrats, if you're walking away from this, is that the people are on our side. If you go out there and you fight in every stinking district, no matter if it's a plus 40R, The Republicans don't have an answer for that. And sure, you might not flip that plus 40 R seat, but you're going to take a lot of, say, plus 3, plus 4 R seats and make them blue.
Correct. I mean, in the end, I mean, it wasn't the kind of Republican seat that like, let's say, a Marjorie Taylor Greene or whatever, which is some ridiculous, I don't know what it is, plus 18, plus 20, you know, or something like that. But the classic example, and I was talking up this one early because I thought we maybe had a chance, was the Lauren Boebert district, where it was a plus 6 Republican district, and she is way too crazy for a plus 6 Republican district. And we had a good candidate there, and just in the end, after the recount and everything, we only lost, think about that for a second, by 540 votes. You know, that was out of something like 123,000 or I don't remember what. I mean, and I'm probably getting that number wrong. I think that was a different district. But point being, a lot of votes were cast, and we came so close to knocking her out. And she's not going to change. She doesn't know how to change. She's a complete moron. So, I mean, you know, and the beauty there is she's in Colorado. Some of the other crazies are often in states where the state legislature will protect them and gerrymander for them and vote suppress for them. Colorado's a Democratic state, so Lauren Boebert's not doing any of that. And so, you know, you need to fight every one of those seats, okay, because you win some of those. We won some of those this time. And the truth of the matter is that in the end, they dumped $50 million in here to save J.D. Vance, one of the more pathetic candidates I've ever seen, who just overwhelmed us with money, and we lost by 6 points in a race that we may have lost by 2 or 3 anyhow, or we may have barely won. It was a lot closer before all that happened. But by making them do that, you know what I mean, and making them spend in some of these other races that they spent in, you know, making them defend North Carolina, for example, or whatever. Well, the end result was, you know, they couldn't put that money against Mark Kelly or you know, or Catherine Cortez Masto, you know, or John Fetterman, or, I mean, you know, Warnock. And it ended up changing a lot of things. And, you know, you guys, again, I don't know what so you guys in Minnesota and folks in Michigan, Pennsylvania, like those three states should maybe be doing a clinic for everybody else, because each of you had huge nights in terms of reelecting folks, taking state legislative bodies. I mean, just unheard of stuff, you know, when it comes to a presidential year when your party's president is in office. I mean, in midterm, the first midterm after your party's president wins office. I mean, if people want to know, I don't know. I think actually it may have been the first time any state legislative chamber was ever picked up. In the first one after, and we picked up like 4 of them. But it was the first time that a Senate seat hadn't been lost during that first one afterwards. A president was elected since 1934 FDR. All right? Yeah. And we didn't only not lose a Senate seat, we gained one. So people need to realize what was accomplished here.
And there was, I mean, and we get a little bit of a look into the internal machinations of the Republican Party. You're right, Vance, they wanted Vance in there. Ron Johnson really must have called in a lot of favors because they poured a ton of money into his race, but it cost them. And I said, you know, if you're the Republican Party, there was a point somewhere around probably September where you said, okay, you know, we can go in there and we can, you know, fight. We might be able to pick these seats up. We might have a chance at picking up the majority. But because they got scared and they wanted specific senators to come back, they really ended up, you know, I think to a point the Republican Senate caucus ended up costing themselves the Senate because they became hyper-focused on a handful of people, including that Nevada race. They tried really hard to win that one, but then that came up, that it came up end for them. But they could have possibly won Georgia. They could have possibly won Pennsylvania. Maybe won, maybe won Kelly's seat down there. But they just basically decided we'd rather have a handful of these Republican senators return and J.D. Vance as opposed to actually trying to win it.
Well, in Nevada, I won't fully blame them only because they had, you know, Adam Laxalt, who has the family name there. And I think they thought that that would be enough, even though his grandfather was, you know, more of a Reagan conservative, which like, at this point is almost a moderate in this party, which is scary and not a crazy Trumper. And I understand that one, but you're right. Some of these other ones, I mean, look, they basically were extorted into doing what they did in Ohio. We just got really unlucky here. It was that J.D. Vance is Peter Thiel's boy, you know? J.D. Vance is his little puppy. And when Peter Thiel said, you know, I will spend $20 million there, but you, Mitch McConnell, have to spend another $30 million there or I'm not going to do it, basically, that's the deal was made, right? If he was going to put his money up and Peter Thiel wasn't offering to put his money up anywhere else besides Arizona, where his other little boy was, Blake Masters, who was such a lunatic he lost. And, you know, Arizona has a more of a blue lean than we do at this point in Ohio. And, you know, I mean, obviously we won every executive office there. Biden has won there. We've won a couple of Senate races in a row. Kristen Sinema is an idiot, so just ignore her because what she did has nothing to do with where that state's headed. So, I mean, the end result of it is you know, it basically Thiel kind of made sure they had to spend money in certain races, but you're not going to knock Mark Kelly, an astronaut, war hero, husband to Gabby Giffords, incumbent out in Arizona with Blake Masters.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not going to happen. And here, sadly, we just, you know, Tim Ryan wasn't an incumbent and didn't have all that comes with being an incumbent. And, you know, on top of that, we're more, you know, they're sort of a lean blue purple state. We're starting, you know, I call it medium reddish. We're not Florida, but we're kind of purple leaning, you know, somewhat red at this point. We did manage. And, I mean, you can tell the difference that Peter Thiel and McConnell's money made because we won all three of the swing congressional seats here, including picking up a seat in my area. I was just at the actual party celebrating it last night. A friend of mine who won the congressional seat here, Greg Landsman, who's a great guy, he was a city council member here, knocked out Steve Shabbat, who was an insurrectionist. And, you know, Marcy Kaptur, they redistricted her just to knock her out. They changed her district up in northern Ohio to a Trump district, and she still won by double digits. And, you know, and there was a third seat also where we weren't supposed to win, and we won. So what that tells you is that we won all these congressional seats. So there must have been a lot of people that voted for these Democrats for Congress, but then also voted for J.D. Vance. And that's just, that tells you the effect of all that money, you know, that money
Georgia
was what did it in the end.
Georgia and Arizona, I'm going to be hard-pressed to say. I mean, it's clear Republicans just cannot run a style candidate in those two states anymore and win. They need to find, you know, substance candidates. And in particularly in Arizona and in Georgia, the Republicans don't seem to have anyone that they can run of substance. They've pretty much alienated the McCain Republicans in Arizona. You know, this whole thing with Herschel Walker, just all it did was make the Republican Party look like an absolute joke in Georgia. I'm going to be hard pressed.
So lucky they had Kemp there as an incumbent. Because if they didn't have Kemp as an incumbent, they would have been in a lot more trouble in the governor's race too. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think those two states are going to be, you know, it's, you said, purplish, but more blue than red.
Yeah, and I really think we missed the boat a little bit on not spending more in North Carolina. Because I think Sherry Beasley, like we now, I mean, I know because that was one of the most frustrating one, you know, in 20 when I was doing the running ads for Biden. I think that was the closest one we lost. I think we lost by a point and a quarter or something like that. Mm-hmm. Beasley only lost by 2 to 3 points. Like, I mean, we keep literally barely losing in North Carolina. We're right there. If we would just put a little more investment in off-year infrastructure, a little bit more money into, you know, into these races and organizing effort and the rest, I think North Carolina can reach that same place that Georgia and Arizona are. And then they're in a lot more trouble, obviously. And that's what we need to do at this point. I mean, look, my prescription, you never give up anywhere, right? You keep fighting everywhere. Mm-hmm. You keep spending money, at least something everywhere. But my takeaway from all this is we've way overvalued Florida. Florida is not what it was 15 years ago. It used to be a place where a lot of liberal Northeasterners were settling, you know, and a lot of the growing groups that were coming there, the Latino groups were ones who tended to have a more liberal outlook. You've had a lot more sort of the socialism stuff working. There's a lot more Venezuelans there that, you know, like Cubans tend to vote more conservative. And quite frankly, the folks that have been moving down there from the Northeast and other places are moving there because Ron DeSantis allowed people to die from COVID and they'd rather have their freedom than care about people and passed ridiculous gun laws and attacked the gay community. It's not attracting liberal Northeasterners or Midwesterners anymore. It's attracting conservative ones. And then there's the lack of income tax. So, I mean, if we can just, Florida is also about a billion media markets, is so expensive. What we spend there any time could cover Georgia and, like, you know, and North Carolina probably. So I hate to say it, and I'm not saying we shouldn't spend anything there. We should compete there. But the days of looking at that as sort of a key sort of swing state, just toss it. And then you'll realize that you should have spent more in North Carolina and Wisconsin, and maybe we could have won those two Senate races. We won the governor's race in Wisconsin. We've won a recent governor's race, the last two in North Carolina. We can, you know, clearly it can be won. We could have won those. And you kind of look properly at Ohio as what it is, which is sort of a second tier swing state, which is you shouldn't spend here before you're done in North Carolina and Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona. I'm being realistic, even though I live here and I would like it. But, you know, we're a smaller state, even if we're not a small state, we're a smaller state with many fewer media markets than Florida. Before you waste money in Florida, come to Ohio. At this point, I'd say go to Texas before you waste money in Florida.
That's the next battleground. In the next, I think the next four cycles, I think we're going to see, our next two cycles, we're going to see Texas all of a sudden become a big headache for Republicans. We'll get to that later. This upcoming House session is just going to be fun to watch because you've got the extremism. You've got the Jim Jordans who want to run their Hunter Biden. I'm going to investigate the investigators. I'm going to try to do everything to protect Trump. You've got the loon ball fringe. And then you have the rest of the party who can't win. We just saw they cannot win by catering to the most extremist side of the Republican Party. And yet that, do you see any path in the next 2 years in the House where that is not going to be the most extremist elements dictating where the U.S. House goes?
No. I mean, look, here's the problem. It's, again, and it goes back to the entertainment complex, right? They just elected this new nutball down in Florida who they claim is like, you know, they claim like the Latina MPG and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Her name is Luna, which if it was Luna Tick, it would make sense. And all I know about her is she was an Instagram influencer, right? Does that sound right? Like, you know, a person that pushed pills on their show. Mehmet Oz, a former football player. Herschel Walker. I mean, these are the people they go for now. Right. Some people that have fame from something else. It's all performance. And so it's not even about like the extremism in terms of like there's actual policy goals there. These are people that just have hatred in their hearts and they love getting on TV. And they realize that by being hateful, they get on TV more. So they're not going to, they don't care about governing. They have literally no interest in governing. So when people are like, you should support Kevin McCarthy because you need to have a governing majority, like they don't care. Their hit on Hannity is more important to them, you know, at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night is more important to them than something passing in the House. So I'm not even convinced, you know, at this point there's going to be a conservative Republican speaker. I mean, right now, look, maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene has clearly been bought off. They've gone to her and offered her God knows what. I mean, they put her back on committees and stuff like that. And so she's trying to round up the crazies. But it's not working. Andy Biggs is running again against McCarthy. This could be the first time since 1923 that a speaker doesn't win on the first ballot, just to give you some history, just 100 years ago exactly. And I right now, you do see some musings from people like an example of one of the, it's not like a moderate, but certainly compared to the nuts, I call him sort of a moderate conservative, Don Bacon, who's from that Nebraska, one district in Nebraska that's more moderate around, what do you call it?
Omaha.
I'm having a moment.
Omaha, I believe it is.
Yes, it's around Omaha. Like, you know, he said, look, you know, I mean, he made it pretty clear. He's like, I'm a Kevin McCarthy guy. But if they block us from we are going to govern. So if they will not allow us to elect Kevin McCarthy, then I'm going to go and start talking to Democrats about who we can all come together and make speaker. And if I was a Democrat, man, I would jump on that because their internal squabbles are such that they need six votes, and I don't think they have it. They don't have it right now, definitely. So unless they can buy off enough people to bring them back on board, there are actually, believe it or not, even with all these lunatics in there, I'd call it about a half dozen, maybe call it the eight that voted in favor of birth control, you know. But if you cross-reference, like, voted in favor of the ACA, birth control, universal background checks, you'll find about a half dozen Republicans. There's one who's Latina, I can't think of her name, her name's Reyes, or something like that, down in Florida. There's Valadeo, who just won in a Biden seat again and barely held on in California. There's Brian Fitzpatrick, who always wins in the suburbs of Philly, that have gone very Democratic because he's very moderate. You know, get together with 25 to 30 Republicans and the vast majority of the Democratic caucus and put a moderate Republican in there who believes in governing. You know, get them to agree to the ones, who, you know, the bills we're talking about right now. Get them to agree to put a vote, you know, on the floor to codify Roe, to put a vote on the floor to pass universal background checks. I don't know. Pick a few things. Say, you do that. We support you. And I really do think there's, you know, is it going to happen? I have no idea. It's a mess. Because, but I think there's a legitimate chance that Democrats are willing to go speak to the 30 or so, at least semi-sane Republicans, that they could join mm-hmm. together with them in the end, and because the right will not vote for McCarthy, at least so far, and end up electing like one of the most moderate Republicans there who's willing to put some reasonable legislation on the floor so we can govern.
If McCarthy had a brain in his freaking head, what he would do is basically he would have approached Democrats with that. Right now, I'll give you three sacrificial lambs. Tell me which bills we're going to put up there. Fine, get me 50 of your votes and we'll be just done with it. And he'd actually probably be in a much stronger position than he is, but I don't think he's going to be Speaker. So, and then as well, I think the other thing, too, and we've got about a minute.
And you also said if he had Jim a brain in his head. And that precludes them, too.
Exactly.
Go ahead, sorry.
It's going to be interesting to watch all these scandals. The Jim Jordan and these scandals are going to bring forward. The reality is there's no there. And it's just going to be Fox News, OAN, Newsmax. And the reality is they know that stuff does not get traction unless the mainstream media picks it up. And them screaming they need to pick it up, that's not going to be enough for them to do it.
That's exactly right. And here's the one area which I must admit I should talk to a friend of mine maybe before who worked in the Senate. I haven't worked on the Senate side. So, you know, I mean, I haven't worked in the House or Senate at all. I'm a campaign guy and always have been. But I'd love to know what the situation is because as far as I'm concerned, I mean, if they do this stuff in the House, I don't understand why at this point we control the Senate. Why we can't just be like, fine. If you do that, we will open up every single thing on Jared Kushner and Ivanka and Eric and Don Jr. We will go straight for Donald Trump's most embarrassing things about his kids, you know, and we're not playing the dirty game there. And when I say embarrassing things, I don't mean like personal, whatever. I'm talking about the illegal stuff they did, which there's plenty of. Do that. You know, like I don't understand
exactly.
Or, you know, you want to go after Hunter Biden? I don't know. Does Jim Jordan have kids? Maybe they've broken law. I mean,
I think we should do a full investigation into Jim Jordan for sure. No, yeah, we do too much of the high road stuff, but we got to stop it though because we're at the end of the time. You see, this is easy. The holidays. This is a gift, man. Cliff Schecter is a gift. Follow him on YouTube.
You're a gift. You give me a place to rant and rave, and you actually like it. I mean, it's great.
It's fantastic, man. And it's not just me that likes it. You are one of the most popular interviews I do every holiday season, and they'd get mad at me if I didn't bring it back. Cliff Schecter, once again,
I will
post all the links here, and of course, the YouTube link a little bit later on. Cliff, happy holidays. All my best. I'll talk to you in 2023.
Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it.
We'll take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on 99.